Jochum?
Jochum.
Jochum, excuse me, I'll get it. You don't have to leave, Mr. Hilger, if you don't want. You're not banished.
Good morning.
Please, proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Scott Jochum. I represent appellee Twilea Fletcher. This appeal was filed by Mr. Hilger on behalf of his client, Doug Lee. Mr. Lee is the ex-boyfriend of Twilea Fletcher. They both worked at UP in Omaha. And Ms. Fletcher owned outright the real estate, the property that's at issue in this case, prior to Mr. Lee, prior to their relationship. They entered into a romantic relationship that occurred after Ms. Fletcher owned the property. The relationship progressed, and Mr. Lee moved in to her house, brought his personal property into the house, his two sons into the house, lived there rent-free for about a year and a half. And then after that, there was a refinancing of the property. They both were co-borrowers on a loan. Now, after that happened, the relationship deteriorated, and parties broke up, and Mr. Lee moved out of the house.
Counsel, can we fast forward?
Yes.
The first assigned error is that the district court erred in refusing to dismiss the case without prejudice, correct?
That's correct.
Could you address that?
Yes, the district court was correct, Your Honor, in finding that Mr. Lee had basically litigated this case in bad faith, that he violated court orders, and so it was not an abuse of discretion for Judge Gleason to enter sanctions in this matter, which was to allow a dismissal with prejudice to essentially stop the harassment that was occurring to Ms. Fletcher.
Doesn't the party have the right to dismiss a case with prejudice?
They certainly
or
do.
Without prejudice, pardon me.
They certainly have that right. But the courts also have the inherent right, Your Honor, to sanction bad behavior. And that's exactly what happened here.
If a motion to dismiss without prejudice is filed, when does that take effect?
That's a good question. It was, in this case, the motion was filed on the eve of trial after business hours. Ms. Fletcher's father was en route from Ainsworth, Nebraska, because he'd been subpoenaed to attend the trial, even though nobody deposed him or interviewed him in the case. On the morning of trial, Mr. Hilger's renewed, I guess, had mentioned to the court that the motion had been electronically filed the eve of trial. And at that point, we didn't have an objection to a dismissal. We just objected to the without prejudice. Didn't want to go through this a second time, and we objected and asked the court that it be dismissed with prejudice. So at that point, what's interesting is, from a timing standpoint, Judge Gleason at that point indicated it would be dismissed with prejudice as a sanction. After the trial, later that day, Mr. Hilger went and electronically filed a notice of dismissal. So on the first end, he filed a motion, set for hearing the morning of trial, but there was never any order granting that motion. Subsequently, he determined to file a notice of dismissal without prejudice, notwithstanding Judge Gleason's clear indication that the case would be dismissed with prejudice at trial.
Are you suggesting there would be a difference if he had filed in advance of the hearing a notice of dismissal as opposed to a motion for dismissal? Is there a difference?
I don't think in this case. In this case, I think very clearly the behavior of the plaintiff and the filings and what happened was that there was an evidentiary submission deadline in the pretrial order. Appellant did not comply with that deadline, and the court, as a punishment, indicated that that was a violation of the court rules and that he would sanction him. So that all occurred before any notice was filed in this case, and I think that behavior.
Well, the motion had been filed.
The motion was filed after that the violation of the court order took place.
No.
So my suggestion is, in this particular case, the bad behavior occurred prior to the motion to dismiss filed by the appellant in this case. And I think courts and the case is clear, case law is clear, that courts have the inherent power to avoid the abuse of the judicial process.
Does a plaintiff by statute have, since a plaintiff does have a right by statute to dismiss without prejudice, does that require the blessing of a court before the case is officially dismissed without prejudice?
I don't think it does. I think that they could actually file a notice of dismissal without prejudice.
So that takes me back to my question of does that make a difference if you file a motion? Is that seeking approval? Does that make a difference from just saying I'm dismissing?
I think there is a difference in the form of the pleading itself, and especially in this case when we feel that there was an abuse of the process itself and the motion was filed literally after we had fully prepared to go to trial. On the eve of trial, to have this electronic motion to dismiss on file, clearly there was no follow-up order or other indication. I think it was the appellant's intent to dismiss it at that point, but at the same time, I'm not sure. There is a distinction between a motion and a notice, I believe.
What if case law says there isn't such a distinction, that in fact the filing of a motion to dismiss without prejudice operates by operation of law at the time of the filing?
And again, I think that goes back to if there is a case that says that, the behavior here that was being sanctioned by Judge Gleason had occurred prior to that motion. And I think if you look at the...
But the case is dismissed.
Well, no, it wasn't. We had a counterclaim on file that was going to trial the next morning. So
right.
It hadn't been completely dismissed at that point.
Well, the plaintiff's complaint had been dismissed.
That's correct. Well,
and
there
so
was a
what,
motion.
What authority did the court have to act on the plaintiff's complaint?
The court had statutory authority under the frivolous statute 25824. We had previously filed a motion for attorney
fees. If there's a pending action, it does. But if the plaintiff's complaint had been dismissed, the court doesn't have that authority, does it?
I believe the court does have the inherent authority to sanction parties for violation of court orders. Parties do have a right to dismiss a case without prejudice before submission. I understand that. But the distinction here is, and I think the issue to recognize here, is that courts don't lose their ability to control their dockets and to avoid mockery of the judicial process, which Judge Gleason found occurred here. So we believe that that Judge Gleason did not abuse his discretion in dismissing the case with prejudice and in awarding attorney fees in the amount of $5,000 to Ms. Fletcher to defray some of the expense she incurred in defending against this litigation.
How could the matter be frivolous if at the summary judgment stage the judge concluded that there were material issues of fact?
Well, I think the judge, upon further consideration, realized what the appellant was doing. I think from the beginning, we had been indicating to the court that some of the actions taken by the appellant were clearly in bad faith. He had threatened the appellee before filing suit that he would sue her for all she was worth, that she would bring her family and friends into the case, which is what he listed on his witness list. 46 witnesses, most of which were neighbors and friends and family, subpoenaed appellee's father to come to trial and then filed a motion to dismiss again on the eve of trial there. Looking back, the court had the ability to, upon further deliberation, see what was actually occurring here, which was bad faith litigation.
But the facts hadn't changed, have they?
Well, they hadn't, but I think...
From the summary judgment motion.
The facts hadn't changed, but I think the appellant's behavior clearly came to light past the summary judgment stage. There was an attempt to issue a subpoena to Union Pacific at their shared employer, where the appellant sent a text message to the appellee prior to the hearing on a motion to issue the subpoena, indicating that they will go through your history with a fine-tooth comb.
Well, plaintiff's behaviors or vocalization of his anger may not have been appropriate, but does that take away from whether or not he had some validity to his claim?
In this case, the court, I think, held as a sanction that by virtue of his behavior and violating court orders and acting in bad faith, as a sanction. That
doesn't the claim have to be wholly without merit for it to be?
And that's what Judge Gleason found in his order, that it was so ridiculous and so wholly without merit as to be frivolous.
Despite the denial of the summary judgment motion.
That's correct. That's correct.
Seems inconsistent, but.
To some extent it does, but in this particular case, under the circumstances, again, the final order that was appealed is one that sanctioned the appellant for his behavior throughout the litigation, including violations of the court order. There are cases that allow the judges to dismiss cases with prejudice.
So if I understand your argument, you're looking more at the section of 25.824 that deals with unnecessarily expanding the proceedings and abuse of discovery and that kind of thing, not whether the claim had merit or not.
That's correct. So we would ask on this appeal that the appellants, that this court affirm the district court's rulings, dismissing this case with prejudice and awarding sanctions in the amount of $5,000 to the appellee.
Thank you. Next matter is State versus Haley.